From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk English. Ah, but this time we're talking Canadian. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each and every week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras. You may be there at your home in Armenia, Spain, but today is Ross Petras's time to shine. He's there at his home in Toronto in Canada. And from what I understand, we're going to be talking a little bit about Canadian English today.
Yes, a little bit about it. We actually did some research on what technically is Canadian English.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did was I did a little survey amongst Canadian friends to find out if they agreed or disagreed. And in most cases, they agreed, but in some cases, they didn't. And we're going back to nuance. Nuanced language always has a lot of nuance. So
this is good because I think most people just sort of assume Canadian English is American English with some funny spellings.
Well, they'd be very wrong.
Yeah.
The one thing that really did get me is in the States, people basically view Canada as like a giant, I mean, to some degree, I mean, you know, what happened just recently, as a giant state, and they're very, very wrong. Canada is very different.
Uh-huh.
It's nuanced different, but it is a different country completely.
As I recall, back when I lived in the United States, we used to call it Canada was America's hat.
Uh-huh, of course.
Although I think you could say to some degree, in a Canadian sense, America is the basement of Canada.
Okay, that's a much more actually polite term than I thought you were going to use, Ross.
I was thinking the same thing.
We're on a radio here and I'm polite, so yes.
We're not starting with Canada, are we,
no.
After all that?
We're starting from Cocoa Beach. So.
Oh.
Allie from Cocoa Beach wrote, and I actually thought this was a fun question. She asked, why are some words I am, im, and others in, as in I'm impatient, but I'm also insecure?
Hmm.
She said, my son asked me, and I thought I'd make life easier by asking you. But could you make it simple so an 8-year-old, my son, and while we're at it, a 38-year-old, me, can easily understand it.
Can I take a guess before?
Sure.
I was thinking about something similar earlier today with suffixes that sound the same but are spelled a little different, like ER and OR.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if maybe these words came from different places.
Ooh, Fletcher.
That's part of it. This is an odd one because, Ross, you're going to probably have to correct me at some point because on one hand, yes, usually there's like when we go to prefixes, you've got un, usually if it's English Germanic, in
right.
If it's usually Latin, an if it's usually Greek or anna or anti, the d, dis, and dis, Latin and Greek. But also part of it is the sounds that we make of the word that follows the prefix.
Oh.
If a word begins with a P, a B, or an M, you tend to start with an M.
Uh-huh.
Impossible, imbalanced, immodest, but it's bilabial sound. Your lips are coming, it's coming together from
the P or the B or the M. Your lips are already going
to go
there, so you like sort of start to mush it all together into an M.
Yeah, because if you've got possible, it's hard to say impossible. You have to like impossible.
And the N, which you're merging with, Kath.
I don't know how to pronounce that, Ross.
Alveolar.
Thank you, Evie. And that's when you're, the N in in is like you do it, your tip of your tongue touches right behind your teeth when you do an in. You're not even aware of doing it. It's kind of like a little behind that, I think.
So like more, like
anyway.
In like indecent. You're sticking that tongue with duh, indecent.
So when it's not a P, B, M, or L, R, you do the inaccurate, insane. I am going insane talking
And then what about
this
word here? What was this word?
Immodest.
Okay, so with the M, the explanation you just gave explains why immodest becomes immodest,
right?
of the bilabial and the consonant. So therefore, we have a word like not manned. It would be un, rhyming with manned, and those the un and the M are both what Kathy described as consonants. So we have a man, a married, etc.
Well, but the
a maternal.
For some reason, un is easier to do than in.
That's exactly what I think happens. I think one's a front vowel. The vowel is sort of pronounced with the front of your mouth. The other is a back vowel. The vowel is pronounced back.
Okay, now Fowler says that un is more English and in was from a Latin word.
I was just about to say that, too. We have two reasonings, I think. I can't...
Ha ha! You cannot ambush your sister.
Well, I was ready, Kathy, with that ambush attack. Kidding aside, actually, I can't really find a real reason. I think the vowel sound is definitely part of it. Also, I think that un is definitely English, and English didn't change, whereas the Latin, the other words we were talking about all have Latin origins, and mm-hmm. they did change. Mm-hmm. However, to make things really fun, the in now sometimes is stuck on to Anglo-Saxon words, and the un is sometimes stuck on to Latin words. And in this case, they follow the same rules that Kathy was talking about before. And I think the back vowel, though, does create reasoning why un doesn't, because un... manned sounds a lot better than a manned mm-hmm. to me.
A man, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess the real simple answer, which is what Allie was looking for, is that it's just easier to say things these
right.
ways,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you use the M sound when you've got your lips closing together because
right.
M goes into that easier, and you use the in, n, n, when mm-hmm. your lips aren't closing together because it's easier to do with your tongue at the front of your mm-hmm. mouth. Wow.
And then if the word begins with an L, you make it ill. Illegitimate. Illegal.
But that rule doesn't count with un because either the vowel or the origin. Like we have illiterate. He is illiterate. He's unlettered.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say unlettered. You say unlettered. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say.
Mm-hmm.
Unlettered
mm-hmm.
is harder, I think. Illiterate is harder to say, too. So, okay, another letter here, Catherine. Do you want to read it?
Can I read? I love this. I'm going to read the email that has spawned this part of the show. Chris from Toronto, and I pronounced it correctly,
good job.
Lewis, wrote, and I'm proud of Chris. He said, you did an episode about the differences between British and American English. Well, don't you think you should also talk about Canadian versus American English? And yes, I'm looking at you, Ross.
Well, take a long, hard look. Here we go. We're going to start. This one shocked me when we first moved here. Fletcher, what is an eavesdrop?
Oh, wait. That's like the gutter on your house, right?
You got it. This one really got me because I remember looking at it and I was like, what in the world is that? And I asked a bunch of friends, I go, yeah, it's a gutter. Like immediately. I thought, well,
okay,
I guess
Fletcher,
I'm in a different
how
place.
How did you know that so quickly?
Well, it took me a second because when you said Eves, I was first thinking E-V-E-S. But I think I do a lot of crossword puzzles. And so the word E-A-V-E comes up a lot. And so I thought of, okay, Eves. Oh, what's the trough? Oh, yeah, sure. So it's the gutter, right? I mean, that's basically what happened in my head.
I'm impressed.
Thanks.
Okay, Fletcher, the next one. How do you spell curb in Canadian English?
If it's anything like British, isn't it like K-E-R-B?
Wrong!
Oh.
This is a
that
weird
was a
one.
Trick question.
This came up on a bunch of websites saying it's spelled K-E-R-B.
Mm-hmm.
And for the life of me, my son worked for a while at with a local authority, and they always spelled it C-U-R-B. He was always talking about C-U-R-B, curb. So I looked up. So I then asked someone from BC. I looked it up on Halifax. I called someone up in PEI. Everyone spells it C-U-R-B for the life of me.
Well, then let me say the only reason I said K-E-R-B is because you asked me the question. If I had been in Canada and for some reason had to write the word curb, I would have just written C-U-R-B.
Okay, so Fletcher, I'm going to give you a check for $100 for that.
Oh, sure.
How would you spell check?
You know, this is difficult because Canada has those UK influences so strongly, but also has the American influences. Not that Canada can't create its own version of English as well. So I don't mean to make it sound like Canada is only an amalgamation of two other versions of English. But having said that, I think in Canada it's with a Q-U-E, right?
You got it.
C-H-E-Q-U-E.
This one really hit me when I first came here. I was some volunteer or something, and they asked me to make a sign and collect checks for people. And I put, you know, give us your checks here. And I wrote C-E-H, you know, American way, C-H-E-C-K-S. And people literally, because they're so used to context, were puzzled. And then, of course, I quickly changed it to Q-U-E, and I learned my lesson.
Mm-hmm.
What's a toque?
A toque. How do you spell toque, Kathy?
That's the next question.
Well, so, okay. Tell me why we would be talking about a toque.
Your head's cold.
My head's cold, so I need a toque. it's some kind of hat. Stocking cap?
Yep. Yep.
It's called a toque.
It's a wool hat.
That's cute.
And that's actually an old French. I mean, I think it's originally French, toque. And then it came into Canada.
Well, then I'm wondering if it's spelled like toque, like the chef's hat. T-O-Q-U-E?
You got
correct.
It.
Correct.
You got
but
it.
But why is it pronounced toque in Canadian English?
Well, in Quebec, I think it's written T-U-Q-U-E.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I always thought it was toque until I heard Canadians saying, what about your toque?
And but I like, do believe, I don't know, but I do believe in Quebecois, it's T-U spelled that way. And then I think it probably just sort of merged into English.
I just want to right now tell any listener for complaints, you can write to Ross, not me, because he's the Canadian and I'm not.
No, you're right, though. I just looked it up. It's in Merriam-Webster as T-U-Q-U-E. You're right.
But it's spelled T-O-Q-U-E, though, now.
Is it?
Yeah, here in Ontario.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, what is a pencil crayon? This one really got me.
A pencil crayon.
Fletcher, can you hand me a pencil crayon, please? What do you do?
Is this like a colored pencil?
You got it.
A pencil crayon.
That one, when I first came here, sounded so weird to me.
Yeah.
But everyone says pencil crayon. Completely. It's all over the place. I've never heard any.
See,
I've never
to me,
heard
that sounds
pencil.
Like a big fat, like Crayola.
It does to me, too. You know? It does to me. A big, like, one of the big fat ones you get when you're like four or something.
Yes,
not even the littler one.
Exactly. The really big one.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know why it does. I have the exact same thing. But I'm going to ask you right now, what's a very common use for a word for bathroom in Canadian?
In Canadian. Let's see. In the U.S., we call them restrooms, bathrooms. But I don't know.
Washroom.
Okay.
Washroom is ubiquitous here. In fact, my son years ago was working at Strand Bookstore in New York, and he was a greeter at the store. This is in New York City. Guy comes in and goes, excuse me, can you tell me where the washroom is? And my son said, oh, you know, welcome. I'm from Canada, too. That was the guy goes, how do you know that? Immediately, the washroom.
Yeah.
That automatically gives it away.
Ross, I got to tell you, that was one of the first things you started saying when you were living there for a while. You said washroom. I've got to go. Oh, I'll be back in a minute. I got to go to the washroom. I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
I just kept hearing it. I kept hearing it.
This one, though, actually, I remember. Okay. What do you call a rubber band in Canadian English?
I truly have no clue. I don't even know what you would, I don't know what you would call that anywhere else besides a rubber band.
An elastic.
It's just an elastic. Okay.
Yeah.
But that, Ross, I remember as a kid, for some reason, people referring to elastics. Must be British books I was reading.
I think it's probably British books. I'm just, when you said that, I thought you were probably going to say that, and I'm curious. Is elastic British?
I think it is, because I remember elastics. I never used it as a kid myself, but I remember that.
A rubber band, also known as an elastic gum band or tacky band. I never heard of tacky band.
No, nor I.
The rubber band was patented in England in 1845. But I don't know. That was an interesting one. I have no idea if that is. Now, Fletcher. Okay, what's the last letter in the alphabet?
Well, for an American, it's Z. But from what I understand, Americans are the only ones who say Z, right?
Right. But here's an interesting thing. I asked several Canadians to recite the alphabet to me. And they went A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, L, M, P. We know the rest of that. And it ends with
Z.
Thank you, Kath, for that. They said Z.
They did.
They said Z, but that's why I immediately, you know, attacked them. They said, oh, yeah, but I would say, like, for example, you know, Arizona's, you know, AZ would be the Arizona. But I don't know how true that is or how that was only Ontario. I asked several Ontarians. Mm-hmm. So that could be a local thing. I have no idea.
So when they sing the alphabet song, they end up with Z.
Well, a couple of people, Jacqueline, her kid, And then a neighbor, they all sang A, B, C, D, F, G with the Z, but they all said Z after that.
Yeah.
So that was, I have no idea if that's just a local thing or not.
Well, isn't that because it's a lyric? I'm not kidding. I mean,
oh, yeah, you know, I think that's the reason. Yeah,
yeah, you're rhyming.
Because Z doesn't really work in the alphabet song as we know the alphabet song.
It ends with a thud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does end with a thud. Yeah. But Z, yeah. Z is pretty common.
Oh, Zed is everywhere. I was accused of being, I mean, not accused, but someone said, you must be American when I first came here.
Yeah.
And I was talking about some call number, PZ403 or whatever, and I said PZ. And the person goes, are you from America? You know, immediately.
Yeah.
So I usually say Zed now because people sometimes stop for a second and look at you. So mm-hmm. It's easier just to go Zed. Here's another one I'm going to ask you, Fletcher. College versus university in Canada.
I guess I sort of think that, I guess like with the Z, Americans are basically the only ones who call it college. So I'm going to assume that Canadians call it university. Like I'm going to go to university.
Mm. Yeah, generally college is generally like a trade school, a 2-year school gives you a certificate. University.
I was just going to say, what is a college?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, now that's interesting though. I'm sorry, I'm interjecting. Because here, obviously, in Europe, university is university like Canada. And colegio, college, is kids, is school for little kids.
And you just took the words right out of my mouth, Kathy. College can also be like, well, not little kids, but college can also be a school for like, you know, high school type college too.
Mm-hmm.
The one interesting thing is it sounded weird at first. People go, I'm going to university,
mm-hmm.
they say.
Right.
I would say in American English, I would say I'm going to the university. I mean, I went to university. But with college, we don't use we say college.
I went to college, right.
College.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same. You're right. Well, I don't think in America, I mean, I never said I'm going to the university. I was like, I'm going to college.
Mm-hmm.
The college was a university. But mm-hmm. I was going to college.
Yeah, but like if you live in the city where the university is, that, you know, someone says, oh, what do you do? Then you'd probably say something like, well, I go to the university.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to the University of Toronto tomorrow. I'm going to the university tomorrow. Okay, what's, basically you get a bill from, you get your electrical bill.
This one.
This one I know all the time. This one is always, we hear this. What do you, when you get your electricity bill, what do you get it from? I got my blank bill.
My electric bill? Are we specifically talking about the electric bill? Or are we talking about any utility?
It can be basically sort of utility bill.
Okay. I want to step out of this for just one second. You know what's really ridiculous is how baffled I am on most of these. Like Canada is, you know, as far as other countries go, really close to here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I don't know most of these. That's wild. That's wild to me.
It was funny because a friend of ours moved to Australia. And she said the weirdest thing was it's so similar yet so different.
Yeah.
And it's like you go to a foreign country and you expect everything to be different. So
right.
You're not really as much.
Right.
Whereas this is sort of the same and sort of different. So you get all sorts of confusions.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you this one. This is hydro.
Hydro. The hydro.
Yeah, I got a hydro bill.
I love that. And I swear to God, Ross, I could be wrong. I swear I think I've read about this elsewhere, not talking to you. That like
you have read it, and I'm just about to tell you where.
Where?
In Agatha Christie with...
That
and we read this,
would be it. Okay.
And this is years ago with Miss Marple.
Okay.
And she goes to the hydro, and I thought for the life of me, being a very uncurious kid, you know, we were talking about that earlier, how kids just sort of accept stuff. I read this really early at this Miss Marple, and I thought, well, hydro is like a swimming pool. So she's going to pay her bill
so
at the swimming pool.
Sort of like,
I have no idea.
I got to tell you, okay, you're uncurious. You did that. I'm like even worse because I just blip over. I'm like, ah, whatever. I don't know.
Hydro.
What, who killed him? You know? Okay, and then you sit down to dinner. And you're going to have, I'm going to give you this, I want you to pronounce this the Canadian way.
Okay.
That's your dinner.
Right. My dinner is P-A-S-T-A. I would just say pasta. I don't know. It's not pasta. What do you say?
This is interesting. This is again, an interesting one. There's a real divergence in Canada with this.
Mm.
Some people say pasta. Mm-hmm. Some people say pasta.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, there's a car, which is M-A-Z-D-A.
Mazda?
M-A-Z, yeah, Mazda or Mazda. Now, this is really interesting. The next word here, P-R-O-C-E-S-S. Okay, how would you say this?
P-R-O-C-E-S-S. S. Does this depend on whether it's a noun or a verb?
No, we're just going to talk about the blank of doing this is.
Well, I probably process then.
You would say process?
I mean, I wouldn't, but if okay. But if I were in Canada,
a Canadian would.
This one really got me because the other day we went out for a lunch at this museum, and I was asking a friend of mine. She said process, P-R-O-C-E-S-S. I don't say process. I say process. Uh-huh. So we're chatting, and then she goes, like, literally, like, 10 seconds later, she goes, you know, well, the process of this thing. And it was just so interesting. So I let her talk some more, and I tried to, like, elicit that word again a couple times. And every time she said process, after telling me she pronounced it process.
Yeah.
So, but this word, this goes back and forth. Some people say process, some people say process.
I got to say, Royce, like, Zed and washroom, this is one of the first... this was on the top five when you first moved there and you really got assimilated. Yeah. That was when you were like part of the Borg. You know?
I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here. Where does that phrase come? Oh, of course, racing, right? So anyway, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of us here, but speaking of O sounds, I remember, I think, learning from you, Ross, about S-H-O-N-E, like the sun was shining.
Oh,
the
my
sun
gosh.
Shone.
That one, get Sean.
Yeah, Sean.
The sun shone.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. That is virtually everyone says Sean, and I cannot say, I say Sean.
We got like, what, 3 or 4 emails about that after Ross said that.
Shone.
He did saying, he's saying shone. It wrong.
The sun shone. That everyone, I've asked every single friend of mine, everyone says Sean.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me. That's one I never would have. In fact, if I were talking to someone in Canada and they kept talking about something Sean, even if they said the sun, I don't think I would know what they were talking about if you hadn't told me.
No, I think they're talking about Sean Connery or something. You know, I mean,
my son Sean.
But that is gonna be like,
your son Sean.
I can't do it. Okay, we're gonna do a couple spelling ones quickly. How do Canadians spell the rubber thing that's on a car wheel?
Oh, the tire?
Yeah.
I would just figure they spell it T-I-R-E. Maybe it's with a Y.
You got it.
It's with an
you
I.
You got it.
Yeah.
You're right.
But how do you spell color?
Color? Okay. So I think color is with O-U-R.
Yep. Canada is replete with O-U-R endings versus O-R. Everything is O-U-R. I mean, you know, if it's O-R in the States, it's O-U-R. Yeah. O-U-R here. Not like, you know, or, either or, you don't say either O-U-R.
Either hour.
No. Hour. Yeah, no. Okay, how do you spell realize?
Probably with an S. Probably with an S.
Wrong.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
How do you, let's be Canadian here. How do you spell realize, Fletcher, with a what?
A Z.
Instead of
it's
an
a
S.
Z.
Yes.
He's picking it up, Ross.
It is tricky, though, because, and I assume you're about to get there, but I know a lot of ER words are spelled R-E, like center.
Yep. We were just going there.
Center, you just got it. Yep, the Eaton Center down the street is this big mall, and it's R-E. Definite.
Okay, question, Ross, since you're a Canadian and I'm not, is there a rhyme or reason? Is there a reason we've got some of these words have the British spelling and others have the American, or not?
Well, Kathy, there's a word that comes to mind immediately called nuance. No, I think what happened, I mean, there's no scientific reason I can give you, but I think what happened was Canada is close to the U.S. with a British background. Next, and it has a French province in it. So it gets basically all got mushed up.
Mm-hmm.
Some things are British, some things aren't British. I mean, one of the most confusing things here is there's a lot of stuff in, you know, it's a metric community, but there's still stuff in pounds as well, and ounces. So you get
really? They do imperial and metric? God.
I mean, Canadians, to some degree, in a sense, are partially bilingual, though, with American stuff, with Americanisms as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's do a quick standard Canadian double-double. Do you know what that is?
A double-double?
Yeah, that's a Canadianism of the wazoo here.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, points and rebounds, I guess.
Oh, no. Tim Hortons is a huge coffee chain.
Oh, sure.
In Canada.
Uh-huh.
Timmy's, really, I mean, everyone. A double-double is a coffee with two portions of sugar and cream.
I'm sorry, I gotta interject. To me, that sounds so vile. I mean, I'm a black coffee girl. I mean, coffee regular with the, like, you know, it's like, oof.
This is really interesting, because I never get regular coffee, but a regular coffee at Tim Hortons is one portion of sugar and one of cream.
Oh.
Now, this really got me, because in New York, Kathy, if you recall, I'll have a coffee regular. Regular coffee.
Milk and sugar.
Yeah. And when my wife came from Seattle, she ordered a regular coffee, and she thought regular coffee was black coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I would think.
And I said, what are you talking about? Regular coffee is sugar and cream.
You got to get a black. Coffee milk. Coffee regular.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly.
Hello.
Yeah, I know. Because she was like upset. And I said, of course, you know, it's like.
That gets me, though, how much deli sort of stuff is very regional. Deli orders in general, mm-hmm. or restaurant orders, are very regional.
Actually, not to be like, to like segue backwards to our previous episode, but we were talking about how the Normans with language and the language, you know, that's a really good point, Kathy. I think you're right. I think mm-hmm. food, it's not just like power relationships between, you know, masters and servants or whatever. It's also just, it's stuff that we do every day.
It's your life. It's your freaking life.
Yeah.
Well, that flipped me out when I first met Randy, who was from the West Coast. I talked about going to the bodegas in New York as a deli, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
Randy was like, what are you talking about? Why are you going to bodegas all the time? In California, they were like liquor stores.
Really? I didn't know
that. So he was like, you know, why are you saying I'll get off now and go to the bodega? It's like, what the heck is she doing? You know?
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and here, a bodega is like, the bodegas are like the in our grocery, in the Mercadona, the bodega department is wine and liquor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's just do it quickly. What's a KD dinner, Fletcher?
A KD dinner.
I've never heard that.
But KD dinner. That sounds fun.
It's a Kraft dinner, mac and cheese.
Oh, a KD
dinner. Is that a big
dinner thing
there, Ross?
That you hear, that Kraft dinner you hear
really?
All the time. Yeah. And I have to say, I was talking to a couple of friends the other day, and they're very like, you know, like into really good food, you know, culinary type, you know, this is really good food. I had a secret confession. I really like Kraft. Has like sort of a chemical taste to it.
No.
And I like it.
You're not my brother.
No, I'm very guilty on that. Because we never get it. We did a couple of years ago for my birthday. But, you know, because I really like it. But it's a certain, like, there's a certain, I don't know, something you can't, you know, you those, like, toxic chemicals really give you a real,
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.